can anybody tell me why we just sang what we sang? Somebody must know. To purify our consciousness, to glorify the parampara, and one other reason. Thank you. It's Krishna himself. Very good, yes. Thank you. One other very simple reason. Yes, you two are very intelligent boys. There's one other very, very, very simple reason why we do it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Because Srila Prabhupada did it. There's many things that we do because our teachers and our former teachers of our teachers did them. But that doesn't mean that we should do them in a mindless way. Because, as Prabhupada was saying, they are meant to clear our consciousness, to get some of the things that we're thinking about to sort of move back a little bit and to make some room for something very auspicious to come into our consciousness. And if we forget that, then we do something which I'm equally guilty of discovering myself doing, where I'm just doing it, it's done. Next I do that, done. Morning finished, morning program over. And then what happens is I feel a little dissatisfaction in my heart, perhaps sometimes a lot of dissatisfaction, because it's like taking a meal. If somebody brings a meal in front of you and you might be not so hungry, but it's breakfast time, and they bring the meal and they go like this and they put it in front of you and then they go whoosh and take it away, then you feel like, what? I was supposed to get some nourishment from a meal. So what we do as devotees, and we should always remember that's what we are doing as devotees, is we get this spiritual nourishment in the morning, at the freshest time of the day. Now I know, and many of you may know, that the morning is also a hard time because you have many other things to do. And sometimes, depending on the day before, one might be sleepy. And so then the chanting of the prayers that we chant and offering of respect to all these sacred personalities and places is to awaken us a little bit, so that we're ready then to hear the message of the Bhagavatam, this wonderful message that is meant to liberate us from all our misunderstandings and all the ignorance that kind of shrouds our awareness of what is actually reality. So we're reading today text 43, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, there are 12 cantos, and Chapter 31 in text 43. This is the Sanskrit. First we read the book. This is such an old book written first in Sanskrit. So first we read the Sanskrit, and then we translate into English.
Dehina jiva bhutena.
Dehina jiva bhutena.
Loka lokam anurvajan.
Loka lokam anurvajan.
Burijana eva karmani.
Burijana eva karmani.
Burijana eva karmani.
Burijana eva karmani.
Karatya viratam puman. Karatya avitam puman. Dehina jiva bhutena.
Dehina jiva bhutena.
Loka lokan anuvrajan.
Loka lokan anuvrajan.
Burijan eva karmani. Karotya viratam puman.
Karotya viratam puman.
Dehina.
Dehina.
On account of the body.
On account of the body.
Jiva Bhutena.
Jiva Bhutena.
Possessed by the living entity.
Possessed by the living entity.
Lokat.
Lokat.
From one planet.
From one planet.
Lokam.
Lokam.
To another planet.
To another planet.
Anuraja.
Anuraja.
Wandering.
Wandering.
Bunjana.
Bunjana.
Enjoying.
Enjoying.
Eva.
Eva.
So.
So.
Karmani.
Karmani.
Fruitive activities.
Fruitive activities.
Karoti.
Karoti.
He does.
He does.
Avritam.
Avritam.
Incessantly.
Puman,
Puman,
the living entity.
Translation. Due to his particular type of body, the materialistic living entity wanders from one planet to another, following fruitive activities. In this way, he involves himself in fruitive activities and enjoys the results incessantly. Please repeat. Due to his particular type of body, the materialistic living entity wanders from one planet to another,
following fruitive activities.
In this way,
he involves himself
in fruitive activities
and enjoys the result incessantly.
The purport: when the living entity is encaged in the material body, he is called Jiva Bhuta. And when he is free from the material body, he is called Brahma Bhuta. By changing his material body birth after birth, he travels not only in the different species of life, but also from one planet to another. Lord Chaitanya says that the living entities, bound up by fruitive activities, are wandering in this way throughout the whole universe. And if by chance or by pious activities, they get in touch with the bona fide spiritual master, by the grace of Krishna, then they get the seed of devotional service. After getting this seed, if one sows it within his heart and pours water on it by hearing and chanting, the seed grows into a big plant, and there are fruits and flowers which the living entity can enjoy even in this material world. This is called the Brahma Bhuta stage. In his designated condition, a living entity is called materialistic. And upon being freed from all designations, when he is fully Krishna conscious, engaged in devotional service, he is called liberated. Unless one gets the opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's liberation from the cycle of birth and death in the different species of life and through the different grades of planets. Om Agyanati Mahandasya Gyanagyana Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So for our guests today, this will be a difficult subject to fully understand because there are so many conceptions in what we're speaking here that need explanation for somebody who is not raised and educated like these young boys in this culture. In this culture, meaning Vedic Indian culture, and also in the culture of spiritual understanding. because there are two cultures here. And most people in India themselves, they in the background, they have some understanding of what is being spoken of here, but they don't execute their lives in harmony with their own spiritual teachings. And of course, this is common worldwide, because I was speaking yesterday to a headmaster, a retired headmaster, a very intelligent man, who has also taken to these teachings. But he grew up as a Christian, so he said, one day, I decided that since I've been born a Christian, raised a Christian, I should read the Bible. But not the whole Bible, I want to read the four testaments. Now, for those who are not born and raised Christians, there are four accounts by four people that make up the beginning of the New Testament of the Bible. And these four people speak of the preaching and the teaching of Lord Jesus when he was here on earth. So he said, I read them. And the first thing that I discovered was I was so shocked by the difference between what was spoken then and what is being presented now. And he spoke of something that we should also all be very careful of. He said he spoke of how over time, and probably I would say laziness of practice, the thread that comes through now is that Jesus Christ has died for your sins. So it's all done. It's already done. It's done. Do you understand? It's done. So if you sin, Jesus Christ has died for that. That's taken care of already. So go on with your lives and do what you can. Be good people. I'm not wishing here, of course, to disrespect a genuine Christian. But this is something that many people adapt to, that I'm already saved. So there's not much responsibility on me simply to go through the regular regulations or routines, but it's already taken care of. And when you go back to the teachings of the personality who gives these teachings, they may be speaking very strongly and very differently from that. They may be saying, you should reform. You should be prepared. Let the dead bury the dead. Give up your work, what you're doing, and follow me. They were speaking in very, very strong teachings. So Srila Prabhupada, likewise, in aligning himself with the message of the Bhagavatam, spoke very strong teachings to us as members of his organization or followers of him, that we have to become very, very strict. Now, before we go any further, I heard Srila Prabhupada say something on a recording this morning, and it sort of shocked me. It shouldn't, but it did. And so I went, because we have, every religion has their body of text. So we are fortunate enough to have also recorded lectures of Srila Prabhupada that have been transcribed, and so there's a great body of information of what he said and why he said it, and there are people speaking on the same subject, so that it's a guide for people who have never met him. So he said, it is our duty to see that not a moment of our life is wasted in topics which are not related to Krishna. Any topic, however pleasant, is not worth hearing if it is devoid of its relation to Krishna. Now, I think any of us would go gulp, because even our thoughts, which we listen to regularly, are not really all the time spiritually targeted. I'm thinking about this thing, that thing, this thing, that thing. And then I turn on some kind of machine and I hear this thing, that thing. And I go into the city to do something and I see and therefore think this thing and that thing and all the things. And I go to work and I hear the news. I do so many things. And I'm at that time, that moment of my life is wasted in topics which are not related to Krishna. So I felt a little bit, to put it in an embarrassing way, I felt a little bit embarrassed that so much time seems to be wasted. Then I started to think there are two ways we can take this instruction. And this is our responsibility as followers, as wishing to remain vital, powerful followers of someone. You have to catch their mood and you have to hold it. Otherwise it dissipates, so that you end up with a very wishy-washy idea that you have no responsibility, you just come here, you're saved, you can do what you want. We don't want that. We want to remember, I'm not saved. I'm actually quite a bewildered soul. And I need to find out how I can realign my thinking all the time with the truth. So I thought about this and I thought that somebody who is like, you could say like a monk, who is in an institution where they're surrounded all the time by spiritual influences, they should very, very consciously, because they had chosen this life, they should make sure that they're not indulging in hearing all kinds of things and thinking all kinds of things, because their business is to be a pure example of a monk or a spiritual person whose primary goal is clearly spiritual and not something else mixed in. So that's confronting, and it should be confronting, and we should be confronted by these things, because if we're not confronted by these things, we won't grow. We'll just drift along on the status quo, the energy around us, and we'll feel good about ourselves, but we won't actually become vital and real in our spiritual understanding. So we need to be confronted all the time. There was one poet in England, and he said something which was quite mundane, but it's quite appropriate in one way. He said that there's two kinds of people in this world. There's the reasonable people and the unreasonable people. And the reasonable people, they always want to keep with the status quo. They're told, turn left, turn right, they do it. And the unreasonable people, they challenge. And he said, because the reasonable people always go along with the status, all progress relies on the unreasonable people. Now, that's a mundane concept. So that can mean progress to hell relies on the unreasonable people, or progress forward relies on the unreasonable people, because the unreasonable person says, no, I'm not satisfied with just being part of the world, what it says I do, I don't think, this is just enough, I'm looking for more. And practically speaking, all those who followed Srila Prabhupada when he first came to America in 1965, almost all of them had dropped out of modern society, and in an unreasonable way that was taking them downwards, they were looking for more. I'm not satisfied. There should be more. So when we feel I'm not satisfied, we should become unreasonable people. We should say, I'm not satisfied, and I don't accept that everything that's told to me is everything. There must be more. Otherwise, I would be satisfied. And then we can say, well, you're just unreasonable. You should become reasonable. But then a good thinker looks around. They go into any place, a workplace, or on the tram going to the city, or anywhere, even into a place of entertainment. And they look very closely with X-ray vision, and they see that these people aren't satisfied either. These people aren't satisfied. Just like there was one great Chinese philosopher, as we all know, named Confucius. And he said something that is so contradictory to the modern way that people are being led forward. He was very determined to set up a perfect government in this world. This was his aspiration. So he said, I can make a city or a village that is so well run that the people who live in that village can hear the dogs barking in the next village, and they've never been there. Now, to our modern ears, that sounds horrible. What, they're all in prison or something? How horrible, they've never been there. We have the freedom to go all around the world and see so many things, and we're not criticizing that. But we're asking to see, is it a symptom of satisfaction or dissatisfaction? Is there a state of mind where I could be so satisfied, not so dull, but so satisfied that I don't need anything more? I really don't need anything more. I'm so satisfied. I can let the world go by because I have now what I need. Is there such a state? This is what they were looking for. And they were looking for it in a dangerous and unreasonable way in the form of drugs and other things. And Srila Prabhupada came along and he looked at them and he could see through the facade of their sensual pursuits. And he could see living entities, souls. And he could see these souls, although they're going here and there, doing so many things, in essence of heart, they're not fully satisfied. And he said, let me give them something that will lead to their satisfaction. And so he gave them something so simple that we nowadays we think that's we have that already. But he gave them the chanting of the holy names, Krishna's name. He said, this is meditation, this is yoga, this is the perfection. If you take this with you into your life, it will shift around your perception of reality in such a way as to free you from all the things that are restraining you from being happy or forcing you to act in a way that may not be bringing you happiness. Take this, try this medicine. And he himself went into the street, into the park, into many places, and he chanted himself with these young boys and girls, as he used to call us in those days. We were about your age. He would call us boys and girls. I mean, I didn't like other people calling me a boy and a girl. I would feel very offended because I'm a woman. But when he called us boys and girls, it wasn't so much because we were young, although that was true, but it was because of his affection for them, that they are like my dependents, I have to take care of them. So it is a very, very positive thing that yesterday and today I saw three young boys chanting the verse from the Bhagavatam in the morning. This is such a nice thing, and I think when you have three, you're going to get more. Because that means that from the very beginning of their lives, they're being given these positive concepts. But then there's another way that we should look at this, that a moment of my life is wasted in topics which are not related to Krishna, or in other words, not related to my spiritual journey. And that is another way to see this. One is don't listen to things that are not spiritually uplifting. The other one is, if you have to listen to things that are spiritually un-uplifting, relate them to Krishna. Relate them to Krishna. Develop your view of this world as being part of Krishna's creation. Don't get stuck in seeing them separately, independently. So the last classes, 1, 2, 3, 4, perhaps 5 classes, have been speaking on a very sensitive subject. Unfortunately, you weren't here for those. It was speaking about how men have to be very careful of women, and women have to be very careful of men. My gosh, what an embarrassment to speak like this. How can we speak in public about this? Everybody is speaking the opposite. So I was listening again this morning, and Srila Prabhupada was explaining that when we talk about the inner person, the soul, as we use the word, or the Sanskrit word is atma, the eternal person within the present bodily clothes, we're not talking in terms of men and women as we know in this world. You see, in this verse also, I'll get to this, there are definitions given of terms. And this is really important if you want to communicate to people, that you both understand the same thing by the same word, or that you understand that you mean different things when you say the same word. It resolves a lot of arguments. Because I may say something and you argue with me. This often happens in family life. And you argue and argue, and later you realize that, oh, I was meaning something different than what you were. So he explained that this male, the maleness of a soul, which may result in being in a male body, has to do with, in the Vedic vocabulary, the word purusha means, or male, means one who is trying to enjoy. That the maleness is in that I can enjoy my life. And the femaleness comes in the meaning of the term to be submissive, to give enjoyment. To give enjoyment, like I can walk into a room and I say, I'm hungry, bring me a meal. Or someone can walk into the room with a meal and say, please take something, you're hungry. So the one who is giving and the one who is taking, they're different positions. They're not different genders. They're different positions. I'm the one who's enjoying. I'm the one who is bringing. And that we are meant and naturally meant to be the one who brings enjoyment. And we bring enjoyment to the divine, to the supreme, or to Krishna. That's our nature. That's how we become actually aligned and happy, and our life suddenly becomes full of no problems. So when the living being or the soul, the Atma, comes into this material world, this world where everything is made of temporary stuff, if they forget that this is my business to bring enjoyment, they start looking at the temporary stuff and thinking, oh, this is really interesting. I could have one of these, I could do this, I could have this. So they suddenly become, by definition, the person who wants to bring things to me. I should enjoy this. And they become dislocated from this essential, integral role, which is naturally them, to bring enjoyment to the Supreme. Not to bring enjoyment, then to bring enjoyment to others, but primarily to bring enjoyment to the personality who is my source. And then it doesn't matter if you have a male body or a female body, it doesn't matter. We're not talking about men and women in that way. So the women should not get offended if we talk about the risk of a man forgetting his spirituality when he sees a woman, or the other way round. There is a male-female element, but the primary one underneath is this, that if you as a woman or you as a man see something of enjoyment in this world and go absorb yourself in that, then you will forget your relationship with Krishna, with the Supreme. You will forget it by automatically. In the same way as if I'm talking to you, I can't see what is going on behind me. I'll have to stop and say, excuse me, and turn around, and then I can see what is behind. And behind me right now is a beautiful picture, and you can see it, but I can't see it. So this is how we progress into the material world. Okay, now what is here for me? This is the mindset that is called materialistic. Materialistic doesn't mean somebody who's greedy, who wants more and more and more. That's not the definition given here in this verse of materialistic. Materialistic means somebody who interacts with material things for their own pleasure. And liberation, or freedom from that, is when I have the conception, the understanding, the sense that this doesn't belong to me, this all has been created and given by Krishna. And when we're in that mindset that everything belongs to Krishna, my family belongs to him, everything belongs to him, everything has come from him, then even if I'm walking through the pathways of the world and have to interact on a worldly level, I won't forget this inner sense that actually I'm here, as Srila Prabhupada would say, I'm here in the mood of a servant. I'm meant to give service or to give pleasure. I'm not the one to enjoy, I'm the one to be enjoyed. And this is a very frightening thought on the material plane today, because if I say I'm meant to be enjoyed, I'll be exploited for sure. If I go to my workplace and I'm very compliant, then I will be taken advantage of, for sure. So the principle has to be that I am not trying to be compliant with this plane, this material plane. I'm trying to be compliant in my spiritual essence with the Supreme. My Master is the Supreme Personality. And this is so important. Just like I have one friend, and she has a very difficult marriage. And she's not happy in her marriage. And she will say to me sometimes such as, well, my husband doesn't appreciate me. And how can I remain in this situation when he's not taking care of me at all? And because she's somewhat devotional and she has somewhat of an understanding of these principles, I say to her over and over again, you're looking at the wrong person to take care of you. You're looking to be protected by somebody who can't protect you. You're supposed to be looking up there. If you look up there, your anger will go away. And not only that, you will feel safe. And she looks back at me like, how could that be? And I say, you have to practice. You have to try, and the different situations that are happening to you in your life are your education, they're your university, the universe, the city which is in the universe, right? University is the city of the universe. You'll learn everything about the universe at the university. But you won't learn beyond the universe because they don't teach that. But here in the Bhagavatam, it's talking beyond the universe, because here we're speaking about how a soul, the inner person within us, according to our desire and our satisfaction and dissatisfaction, we will go in different directions because I am permanent. I exist eternally. We say, how can I believe that? And many times you have to talk yourself through the logic, so that your logic becomes fixed and you can understand when people argue with you, you can go, no, it's very simple. This, 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 this. And that's why Srila Prabhupada, he would take his students on morning walks and then he would challenge them, or he'd get them to challenge him. And he would say, modern scientists, what do they say? And then they would start saying, scientists believe this, this, this. And then he would refute the points they were making, not just for something to do, just for some passing time, or, as they say nowadays, to kill some time. But he would do this because it was his training. Make your mind active, keep your intelligence strong. And that's why he so much appreciated young people. And he would say things that now we older people go, oh. He would say, young people, their brains, they can learn. This is the time of life for learning. And old people, after 50, you know, they're sort of like, like, you know, some elastic that you pull and pull and pull and slowly it sort of sags. So the brain is not the same.
Brainwashing.
You need a brainwash? So he was pointing out that as you get older, in other words, you get set in your ways, basically. He wasn't really criticizing old people. But he was pointing out, when you're young, your brain is like, let me... Just like, you know how it is sometimes in the early morning when you first wake up? If you haven't had a terrible night before and you're super tired, if you have a good, fresh morning, your brain is fresh. And it's the best time to think because your brain is fresh and the day goes on and your brain starts to be full of different impressions and it's not quite the same. So he wanted that these young people would hear this message and would assimilate it and start looking at the world differently. And this is our challenge. Look at the world differently. You don't have to close your ears and not deal with anyone and just, you can't deal with the world. It's not that. That may be, if that's your job of service, but mostly for all of us, it's not that. It is look at the world differently. Try to see Krishna's hand in everything. Try to see what I'm going through now. This is my education. I have to accept it. I will learn something from this. And Srila Prabhupada also, he would speak about how the main education in our life goes on throughout our life. We study in the early part of life to get a job. So we get that done, and after we have done that study, then our studies begin, if they haven't already. We have to work out how to deal with life, how to deal in this situation and that situation, how to deal with all our desires, how to see Krishna's hand, how to redirect our attention back to a higher perspective. And we shouldn't think that the job is ever done. We shouldn't think, I've done that now, I'm one of them. We should always be thinking, this is my work, on a moment-to-moment basis, if I was so fortunate. I do this. And perhaps I thought when I was younger, oh, this sounds like so much hard work. I'd much rather sign something and sort of check in and be there and not forget about everything. But then I realized that, oh, I have to do a little work at least. When you're driving a car, you can't say, oh, this is such hard work, I have to keep looking at the road. You know, why do I have to do this? Let me just relax. No, you're the driver. The person sitting next to you can go to sleep, but you can't go to sleep, you're the driver. So there are so many things in life where we have to keep attention. We can't say, I had a meal, I had breakfast today, from now on I won't need to eat anymore. Nobody will believe that philosophy. They'll be, by lunchtime they will want to know, where is some more food, so I have to keep eating. So I also have to keep growing. I have to keep growing as a devotee, as a spiritualist. If I don't identify myself with this organization or that organization, I still have to keep going. I still have to keep growing. And if I identify myself with this organization, with Srila Prabhupada and what he is teaching, I especially have to keep growing because he's so far ahead of me. He's so far ahead of me and he's calling me forward. Please come, make some progress. Please come forward. Please understand the message of the Bhagavatam. So here we're talking about somebody who thinks in terms of themselves as who they know when they look in the mirror. That person is called a jiva bhuta. That means they're possessed by an understanding of themselves in relationship to their body. This is me. And somebody who has come to the point where they understand, actually this is not me, by logic I can understand this, then they're called Brahma Buddha. And the example Srila Prabhupada gives is of a coconut. In India, there's many, many coconut trees. And you can take a coconut and you can bring it down and keep it in your room or keep it somewhere. And gradually what happens is, over time, by nature, the inner shell, the pulp that's very soft, if you open a baby new coconut, you open it, there's water, and then there's a very soft, like pulp. And you can eat that, and it's very pleasant. That's the coconut fruit. But if you leave the coconut for a long, long time, sitting somewhere, that inner shell, the water will dry, and that inner shell will harden into something that's very solid. And gradually what will happen is it will separate itself from the outer shell. So that you have the outer shell, what you can see, but the inner shell from the inside has separated, and if you shake the coconut, you can hear something rattling on the inside, because they have become two, not one. So this is the example he gave, that how one becomes gradually separated in understanding from the body idea. And then one is free. He also explains how, because we have a thread of desires, we're always acquiring new desires. Oh, I wish I lived in America. Oh, I wish I lived in a nice house. Oh, I wish I had children. I wish I was married. I wish I had a good job. I wish I had this. I wish I had that. Then I watch television and I see, oh, I wish I had one of those. I wonder what that would be like. Oh, so many desires. We accumulate desires. And then we have more desires than we have time to get those things. And so when we're come through the cycle from babyhood to old age, and then at the time when we're about to leave the body behind, we may think of all those unfulfilled desires. Or we may, as we get older, this is very common, an old person looks at little children and thinks, I remember when I could run like that. I remember when I looked in the mirror and there were no wrinkles. I remember, and you remember back, and thereby you're forming your future. But people don't understand this science. So from these desires that one is forming, a future is being created for one. And one moves in this way, and according to the Bhagavatam, one life is just like a flash. It's just like that, a life. And to give you an understanding of this, it's like days. If you think of lives like days, every day you're the same person, and you go through a day, you get up, you have your meal, you do this, you do your work, you get tired, you go to sleep, and the next day you wake up again. And one day you wake up very good, happy, everything goes well. Another day you wake up with a headache. Another day you wake up sick. Another day you wake up angry with somebody. There's so many varieties that go in our days. But I, the person, remain the same throughout all these experiences. If you examine that, you will have a little idea what it's like. Because when I'm going to bed, I might say, I've got to get up early in the morning. I've got 5 things I need to do in the morning. And I might even write myself a note. I've got to get up, I've got to get up. I go to sleep, I wake up, I connect with what I was thinking when I went to sleep. Oh yes, I've got to do those things. And off I go again. So the Bhagavatam is speaking from such a high perspective up here, examining down here where I am going on with my life, like days, one day, one day, one day, one day. And saying, turn your activities into a meditation on the Supreme. Do them with this mentality, and it will not accumulate into lifetimes and lifetimes of desires to be fulfilled. It's a spiritual technique, it's an art, as Srila Prabhupada was saying. It's possible for anyone. A child can do it. Anyone can do it. If they come in touch with somebody who can teach them, they can do it. So here Prabhupada says, unless one gets opportunity to associate with the bona fide spiritual master by the grace of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's liberation from the cycle of birth and death. So what he is saying here is that unless you come in touch with somebody who can teach you this spiritual perspective, then there's no way you would come to that conclusion by yourself. You would continue on in this cycle. You'd become a reasonable person. You would have all the right desires in mind. You would die with this thought, wake up with this thought, the next day would go on. And the only way that you would get another concept that maybe this isn't enough is if you meet somebody who knows that already. And what to speak of if you meet somebody who has a realization of that, not just a theoretical understanding, but who lives in that reality. To meet someone like that is both wonderful and quite shocking, because they're not like everybody else in the way they look at things. And they invite you, come and have a look at things like this, and you do, and then you realize, whoops, now I'm not like everybody else either. Now I look at the world differently. I'm not dominated by the same goals as the rest of the world. Now I'm more thoughtful. Now I see things differently. And then some people would say, oh, I don't want to do this. And they would turn off the light and they would go back to sleep. But other people would say, yes, this is what I've always been looking for. A way out. And now I want to learn this and give this to others. And this is how you learn this, is if you give it to others. If we could live happy and healthy lives without harming others, why wouldn't we? What an interesting thought. Why wouldn't we? So if we can live spiritual lives without harming others, why wouldn't we want to give it to others? This is our teacher, Srila Prabhupada, this is his request, give it to others. Now I'll finish here. I've gone round and round the universe in this class. Please excuse that. But we had the honor of having some guests this morning. So I think a straight directive class would have been a little harder for them to follow. So I still remember how when I was your age, I was in St. Kilda, Srila Prabhupada was visiting the temple there. And at that time, the temple that's here now was in St. Kilda. And it was only a terrace house. But they had done a lot to make it have a spiritual atmosphere. But it was small and it was cramped. And occasionally young people would come spontaneously. They would have got, just like perhaps yourselves, met somebody and they gave them a card or an invitation and they came. So one day Prabhupada was visiting, which he did once a year, for 3 or 4 days. And I was standing at the bottom of the stairs because he was staying upstairs. And he was coming down the stairs and I had my attention on him, of course, because he was the special event in my life. So I was looking at him and feeling very happy to be able to see him there. And he came down the stairs very graceful, very, very graceful and very aristocratic, small, but very graceful, and he walked down the stairs, head held high, and he walked past the door to the temple room, and I was standing over here in the hallway, and he was going out the door. So I'm standing here, he walked down, he put his head in the temple room, he looked around, and he saw there was one young woman there, about your age. And he turned to me immediately, and he said, take care of her. So he didn't, everything was finished. I couldn't run out the door going, ah! He had given some assignment, and the assignment was take care of somebody else because they have come So as devotees, we should always feel like that, that somebody who comes here as a guest, and in our Vedic culture, Indian culture, a guest is somebody who we treat with a lot of appreciation, because Krishna has somehow or other invited them to come. From within their hearts, they have been inspired to come. So, again, my apology for directing the class in a different way, but also my great pleasure to see some young, fresh faces here. Again, thank you for coming. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Yes? You have a question? No? Do you have a question today? Tell me. What's your question? If a big bird, I'm just finding out, if a big bird who is doing some service, yes, kills some ants, if a person while doing some service kills some ants, he didn't mean to do it, but he kills them, does he get a reaction? Is that correct? What a good question. We are very impressed with your questions. If he's doing something in service, if he's trying to do some service, then no, he doesn't get a reaction. Because he didn't intend to hurt the ants. He was trying to do something else, but the ants were there as well. But if he goes around and stomps on the ants, then he does get a reaction, even if he's doing service. You know, one day where I live in Perth, Western Australia, we have a lot of ants because we live on a 5-acre property. And so I regularly go backwards and forwards to the place where my husband stays. He has a little cottage. So I regularly walk out to bring him things or take things back. And as I'm walking along the asphalt or the rocky areas, the sandy areas, I see all these like volcanoes. They're anthills, little ones, sometimes big ones about this big, and they're made out of sand, and every ant comes up, they come all the way up to the top, and they're very clean. They take their grain of sand and they put it right over the edge. They won't just come up to the top like some people and drop it right there, like somebody who puts their shoes. They drop their shoes in the doorway and they walk into the temple and the next person trips over their shoes. They won't do that. They'll put their shoes or they'll put their sand right far away and then they go back down again and they collect another piece and they come and they put that one over there and gradually it builds up and up and up. And I would look at them and think, look how many grains of sand they have been taking out of there and putting to make the anthill. And then a very mischievous part of my mind says, oh, I wonder what it's like under there. I wonder what would happen if you put a stick down there. I wonder what you would find. And then I remember a story from the Srimad Bhagavatam about a young girl who thought like that. She saw there was some kind of a beetle in a hole. And so she thought, I wonder what happens if I put a stick in there. Yeah. So she poked the stick in, but it was a great yogi. And she poked it in his eye, and he came out. She said, oh, I'm very sorry, I didn't mean to do that. But she had to have some reaction for doing that. So if I'm walking backwards and forwards, I told myself, if you're walking backwards and forwards, you're going for service, right? I'm walking from there to there for service. But if I stop for a moment and I divert my attention and think, I wonder what I could do to annoy the ants, then I will get a reaction, even though I'm doing a service. But if I'm walking by and I step on the anthill by accident, and maybe I will affect the ants or maybe not because they're very clever. But if I did, then Krishna would give them some protection and myself also. So we have to be very careful of the part of us who's doing service and wants to see something or another on the side as well, that will get a reaction. Do you understand? Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Good question, another good question. Well, if you're doing devotional service, why would you get a reaction? And the answer to that is that I'm doing devotional service, but maybe I take some time off. And when I take my time off, I say, oh yes, I'm doing devotional service, but I get distracted by something and I forget to do my devotional service and I go in a different direction, then I might get a reaction because I might do something that's not very nice. Do you ever coming to the temple and on the way you see something and you start thinking about all other things? Does that ever happen? No? Look at that. There you go. Well, sometimes it happens to some people. I won't say myself, but sometimes it happens that we're doing something and we get distracted and we start thinking about something else. And then you see a reaction means that I did that and that's the result. I'm going this way, that's my devotional service. But all of a sudden I go do that and then that's the result. We call it a reaction. You can also say it's the result. So then I might say, oh, thank you, I got a result. That's not the result I want. And so I step back and I go on with my service. And then there's no reaction when I'm going on with the service. What intelligent boys you are! Do we have any intelligent adults here as well? Question? Please. Now all the adults are feeling like, oh, the... the children are too intelligent. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned about a lot of designation. How do we get a lot of those designations? We're going to be doing devotional service, like chanting. Those designations kind of affect us and divert us and start thinking about the knowledge.
Yes. So designation, the word designation means what I kind of, you could say, tags in modern computer language. It tags on me that I'm a woman. It's because I'm a woman, I'm part of this group. And then I'm a young woman, so I'm part of that group and that group. And then I'm a very intelligent young woman, so I'm part of this group, that group, and that group. And then I'm an intelligent young woman from India, so I've got another four groups I'm part of. And they go on and on. I'm more intelligent than those ones and less intelligent than those ones, so I'm a moderately intelligent for another group. So, and we're thinking in this way all the time. We're comparing ourselves with things and reevaluating ourselves all the time. That's pretty much what we're doing when we're thinking. Oh, I like this, I don't like this. It's another group, the people who like this. I'm one of that group. So each one of these groups that we're forming in our mind is another way that I think of myself other than who I really am. So what we can't not do that. That's the way that we operate. This operating system is like that. But what we do is we try to designate or tag ourselves as something closer and closer and closer to our essence. So the first tag that we take, as Srila Prabhupada gives us, the first designation is, I'm a servant, I'm a servant, I'm a servant, I'm a servant. So that counters the tendency to think, I'm an enjoyer, I'm the one who should be enjoying this situation. No, we discipline ourselves, no, I'm a servant. That's one. Then we take another one, which is, I'm a servant of God. I'm a servant of God. That's another one. I'm a servant of everyone. I'm a servant of God. And then we start to build our tags around that. Now, this is still not really us, actually. This is the preliminary us. The us is who is it inside who's saying all of this? But that comes later. Initially, we transfer our tags to spiritual designations. And then when our mind wanders over to these ones, we have a way to bring it back to these ones because we have a definition of ourself that's different than it was then. So I'm a Gujarati, I'm a good sportsman, I'm a stupid person. We say, no, I'm that, yes, no, I'm this, I'm a servant. And these are just some of the things about me, but this is who I really am. And these also pertain to this and this. And I'm the operator of the system, so I'm not those things by definition. So I'm gradually getting a more clear picture. And then through reading, it's confirmed everywhere. If we read the Bhagavatam, these spiritual literatures, they confirm these points for us. And so gradually we're supposed to become stronger and stronger. Then like the coconut, the coconut within the shell, it becomes like more dominant than how we thought before by our practice. It can come quick, it can come really slow, depending on our practice. But as we practice properly, we begin to see actually, we ask questions actually. We come to a point where we say, well, what am I then if I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not, what am I? But first, to stabilize ourselves, we say, you're a servant of Krishna, you're a servant of God. All right, so bring your mind back from those to this, and then in future there's this. But as long as this is still going on, you have to come to this. That's your next step. And when that's no longer going on, then you come to this. Yeah? Any other? Oh, we've got another. Excuse me, we've got one very intelligent question here, I hope. Yes? If Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why did he create the demigods to be in charge of different functions in the universe? Well, you know, if you go to any country in the world today, you'll find who's in charge, what's his role. He's called the... Minister? Prime Minister. Prime means first. He's the Prime Minister. Or he's the President. Right? And many other titles in different languages. So he's the number one in charge. Yes? And then what does he create? In America, what's that called? What he creates? One of the older folks can help us with this. What does he create? Uh-huh. Sorry? I can't hear you. A government, yes. But he creates what's called a cabinet. Yes, a cabinet. A cabinet, you know what a cabinet is? It has drawers, and like that. He creates a cabinet. And in that cabinet, he puts all these people who are supposed to help him. Not because he can't do it, but because they're going to extend his power. Now, when Krishna, when God comes, why does he create demigods? Because he wants everything to run properly. And he also wants to be independent, free of all that management. This is a very simple way to explain it. So he creates all those personalities, and they should do the work, and he should play. Would you rather play or do work? My goodness, you should be in the cabinet. You're going to become a demigod? Well, you have to learn to play. But play with Krishna.
And to become the eternal servant of Krishna.
Yes, exactly. He has to become the eternal servant of Krishna. And then he can play. Until then, you're right, you have to work. So he creates them to assist in the universal management. But none of them are the prime minister. The prime minister is on top. Krishna is on top. Thank you. There was a question at the back.
Sometimes we tell ourselves, like, I want to be myself, or like, because somebody is telling you to do something, but it's not making you feel good.
Yes.
So is it your body telling you that, well, how do you realize that when you beat yourself, that is it your body telling you that this is you, or how do you realize
it? It usually refers to the idea of your nature. We have a human nature. Each one of us has we have an outer body, and then we have a personality, you could call it. And so our personality may be a certain way. So when somebody says to us, can you do this, and it doesn't align with our personality, we feel some uneasiness to do it. But because that personality is also created by all these desires and things in the mind, perhaps from previous times, even to now, we don't want to be limited by our personality, because it's not our permanent personality. So as you get that understanding, it becomes firm that this is not my permanent personality. We find ourselves capable of stepping beyond its limits more easily. We trust that I can step beyond the limits. In the meantime, yes, it tends to be in the mind. I can't do this, I want to do this, why are they putting pressure on me? But it's because we're not situated in an understanding of myself in my truest sense. I'm misidentifying with the mind. Mahatma.
Now there is not much time.
No.
Today the appearance of big personality. Bhakteshwar Pandit.
Rakhveshwar Pandit. I forgot. We have only a little time and I haven't done any research, but Rakhveshwar Pandit was a very special devotee of Lord Chaitanya, and he lived with the followers of Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri and also in Navadvip Mayapur. And Lord Chaitanya, he danced one time. This is what he's very renowned for. He was dancing, like we dance, I came in, everyone was dancing. So we dance in a scheduled way, right, for maybe half an hour, an hour, and then we go to the next part of the program. But he danced one time in his enthusiasm and his devotion. He danced all day, then all night, then all the next day, then all the next night, then all the next day, and all the next night. And then sometime after that he stopped, without stopping. That means not eating, not sleeping, not doing anything else. He was dancing. So that was such a superhuman thing, and everyone was so amazed to see the beauty of his dancing and the enthusiasm and the divinity of his dancing, that Sri Chaitanya said that, I have one wing. He compared him to like having a wing. He had so much power and energy. He said, if I had another wing like Rakhveshwar Pandit, this particular personality, then I could fly in the sky. So he was an exceptionally devotional personality, and his chanting and his singing was very, very beautiful and very affected many people. And after Sri Chaitanya was no longer with us, he accepted the responsibility for the place where he stayed in Jagannath Puri, which is, you can go there to this day and see that place. It's a very sacred place called the Gambira. And he took the responsibility to the maintenance and the worship, and everything should continue. And to this day, followers in his lineage, which are for hundreds and hundreds of years, are still maintaining that particular sacred place. So he was a very, very special personality. So thank you for reminding me. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Thank you. If there are any other questions, we can speak after. Thank you so much for being so active in your listening. Hare Krishna.